back. You listen to Grilling Guys on the Grilling Guys Talk Network. We're live from Standard Lumber and Standard Kitchen Studios, beautiful downtown Grand Rapids. And bam, January is gone. And we're talking February, talking a little Super Bowl. But right now, we're going to talk a little bit of wine. And this is one of my favorite topics. And the most knowledgeable guy I know in wine is sitting across the studio from us, right? Brian, welcome back to the show, man.
Thanks for having me.
Catch him with a mouthful of pork rib.
Well, that's all right.
They do that on
And if you just caught on to the show recently, you can catch our show in form of a podcast on thegrillingguys.com. And you can go to the iHeart app and download the podcast for The Grilling Guys from ESPN 96.1. So you can take us with you wherever you want in case your weekends are too tied up to tag along. But we sure enjoy all the thousands of downloads we're getting and encourage it because our sponsors love it.
Right. Absolutely. So, Brian, walking in today, you were telling me that we got to get you in and out of here in a good fashion because it's blending day. So maybe you could – is that did I term that right? Explain that to me a little bit.
Well, in the winter, it's one of our big – efforts every year is to take what we have as a bunch of individual batches from fermentation and sort of the beginning of the winemaking process, and then we trial blend things to determine what we're going to put with what to bring together the production batches that will be bottled through the spring and summer months. So
I imagine one of the big tests you'll be giving it is sugar.
Well, that'll come as part of the process, sure.
How else do you determine the mixture rates? Because every batch is going to be different each year, right?
Right. So let's just take one of our biggest sellers, Capriccio, which I brought here. Would be another good wine probably with ribs and some of your Super Bowl fare. It's a blend of a few different grapes, and those individual grapes are in different batches still right now as they went through fermentation and initial cleanup. And so now it's a function of putting together those individual batches into the blend. And so that's, you know, it's one part kind of art and one part science because you're tasting things and in trial size, but you also have to look at what quantity you have available and what you're trying to, what other products you have to make. So you kind of go in order of priority, making sure you get the priority blends done while you have the most raw materials to choose from. And then the job gets harder and harder as you get down to the last few wines where you're running out of raw materials and options get a bit more limited. Then, you know, we do that in a lab with 100 milliliter flasks to make the arithmetic pretty straightforward. But the real work is then with the cellar crew has to take those instructions and translate them into 1,000, 2,000, in the case of Capriccio, 13,000 gallons of wine at a time. And so when they blend in real life, we blend to a measurement in a tank. So we measure how much basically air is left in the tank, and that tells us how much liquid is in the tank. And so you can't unblend. So that's the kind of operation that gets everyone's attention.
You can't just keep adding things to try and balance it
right.
out.
Right. You can add, but you certainly can't subtract. Yeah. So
Brian, this is interesting. Are most wines that are they a blend or are they just a single grape?
Well, it depends. I mean, certainly it depends on the winery and the region and the wine. But even a single grape, take Capriccio or say Pinot Grigio, for example. That's, you know, a grape, Pinot Gris. We may have three or four different batches of that in the cellar based on different vineyards, different yeast maybe that we chose. And so the final blend might represent, you know, a handful of those batches or all of them.
So when you're trying to blend them, are you using like a cup of each or a half gallon of each?
100 milliliter bottle.
Yeah, 100. We have a graduated cylinder so that you just kind of pour in the ratio that you're looking for. And that way you can, your percentage is equal a milliliter, so it makes it a little bit more easy to get a feel for it. But then we obviously later would do things like sugar trials on something that was not dry. And that actually we'll probably talk about some not dry wine here in a little bit.
And then you must have to take copious notes.
Yeah, you have to take copious notes, and I like to have the notes backed up because one year we got all done with it, and somehow the file we were working from got screwed up and had to go back and resurrect it from the chicken scratch in the lab. So I immediately save off a second copy of the actual blending file after we're done because I'm not doing that again.
Nice. If you just tuned in, you're listening to The Grilling Guys on The Grilling Guys Talk Network, and we're here every weekend, whatever station you're listening to, support their advertisers because it takes a lot of wine to make this show. So buy the wine, buy the oil, buy the grills, but support your local station. We thank them for carrying us, all our affiliates around.
So, Brian, this process, it intrigues me because how much of it is taste? I mean, and how many blends are you going to do later today and tomorrow? You said you're doing whites today, so I assume reds tomorrow. How many will you taste, and how do you discern between them? I mean, after a while, it seems like my palate would be messed up.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the tricks of being a winemaker, I guess, is you know to trust your palate over time. And so certainly that's why we split it into a couple days. But we'll start with probably 50 different batches, and we're going to whittle down to making about 10 different wines.
And so, do those little crackers actually clear your palate, or do you do something different?
It doesn't
rinse out with water?
You know, water, certainly. Yeah. It doesn't hurt. We're not drinking the wine during the process, okay?
Oh.
So there's a lot of sampling.
That's why I'd never be good at this.
Wouldn't either. Yeah. I'm going to spit this out?
Right.
Yeah, no,
saving it.
It takes some getting used to, but that's part of the process, too. Otherwise, the blends do tend to erode with regard to quality through the process.
Sure. Okay, so we're trying a Vino Rosé right now.
Yeah, so I think this is a good wine with a lot of the types of things that you might pull out on Super Bowl Sunday. It's kind of rosé is kind of hit down the middle. They got that refreshing note of a white wine, but also a little more structure from the red component.
And the term is lost on a lot of people as of 10, 20 years. It seems to have drifted away ever since whoever it was, Martini and Rossi or somebody used to make it years ago. And I think people used to buy it by the gallon jugs, and it just sort of lost its flair. But you guys have brought it back in a very big way. I noticed a lot of it on your racks, and this is just a stellar wine.
Thanks, yeah. Rosés are great in a cool climate, too. I mean, the nature of the cooler climate does produce that more fruit-centric wine. Having that pink color in there is fairly straightforward to do in our climate as well. So, and it's a format that's gained a lot of traction. It was dominated by the super sweet market there for a long, long time. So people saw pink wine, they just thought sweet. But the market's changed. People get it. People get that rosés can be anywhere from dry to sweet. Some of the best ones are dry.
And when you say dry versus sweet, the you're talking about, are there tannins in a pink wine like this as well, like as there are in red wines, or what makes one dry and one
not
sweet?
Not really. I mean, we talk dry or sweet. We're talking sugar, residual sugar. So, you know, the sweetest wines might be in that 6 to 8% range, where your dry wines are going to be generally under 1. And that, of course, is kind of a balance between the sugar and the acidity. So
that pink body's coming from the red grape.
Yeah, a little
not
bit.
The tannins.
There's some limited skin contact, which won't really give a lot of tannin, but will give a little bit of flavor from the skins versus a white wine that has virtually no skin contact. So it's really just the juice flavor you're getting.
So this can of Vino Blanco you have, that's what you used to call Vino Verde, right?
Correct.
Yeah,
correct.
That's a phenomenal wine, in the summer especially. Very cold. It's just ridiculous. And tell us where your store is, where your outlets are.
So we have two tasting rooms. Our main facility in Fenville, which is just off of 196, about 15 minutes south of Saugatuck. That's where we do all of our production. It's really one of the largest tasting rooms in Michigan and in the Midwest. We do our tours and a lot of our events out of that space. And we also have a satellite tasting room in downtown Saugatuck, which is a nice way for folks that are in town maybe just for the day to get a hold of us without going all the way down to the farm.
Yeah. Well, cool. Brian, stick with us. We're going to want to talk a little bit more about some of these other varietals. But coming up next, Bob's going to give us some Kansas City sticky ribs that might be good for your Super Bowl party. Stick with us. We'll be back.